I'm going to be covering the opening section of your notebook with you, our vision and values for small group ministry at Willow Creek. And I'd like to begin by asking you the question, what is it that makes Jesus cry? It's a fun Bible study to do, to go through the New Testament and try to answer the question, what is it that makes Jesus cry? What brings tears to his eyes and breaks his heart? Well, you can, of course, remember the shortest verse in all of the New Testament, which is Jesus wept. And the context in which that occurred is when he got news that his close friend Lazarus had died. And I believe that Jesus weeps over death and what death does to people. But there's another passage that indicates Jesus cries as well over something that is very, very significant to those of us here at Willow Creek. In addition to all the smiles that Willow Creek brings to the face of the head of the church, the Lord Jesus Christ, I think he cries over this church as well. Because in the Gospel of Matthew, it records that one day Jesus went up to a hill that overlooked the city of Jerusalem. And he looked down on the city of Jerusalem, and it says that he began to cry, and to cry out, and to realize that what was breaking his heart was the fact that the city of Jerusalem was filled with people who didn't have a shepherd. He called them sheep without a shepherd. And I suggest to you that it breaks the heart of the Lord Jesus, and it breaks the heart of the God of the universe, that men and women should be sheep without a shepherd. Now, what does that mean? When he looked down at all those countless people in the city of Jerusalem, what was it that broke his heart? What was it that troubled him so deeply? Well, you get some insight into that from other passages in the Gospels. In John chapter 10, Jesus distilled what a shepherd was. And I could net it out for you. Jesus said that what he hungered for every single person to have was simply this. He wanted every single person to be known by name. You see, because he said that shepherds know the sheep. He wanted every single person in the city of Jerusalem to be known by name, to have a shepherd who would know them. And that's not simply know the phoneme of made up of the letters that comprise their name. In other words, that I would be part of a church where my name, Jim, is on some roster someplace. That's not what he's talking about. What he's talking about is that every person who is infinitely valuable to an eternal God, in our colloquialism around here, every person who matters so much to God deserves to be known, concretely and tangibly known. They deserve to have their hopes and their dreams and their fears, their strengths and their weaknesses, their talents, their temperament, known by somebody. I believe it's the God of the universe has designed that we were made to be known and loved. So I think he cries over Jerusalem because there are all kinds of people down there who aren't known. Nobody knows them. Nobody walks with them. Nobody comes alongside of them. And in John chapter 10, the second characteristic of this shepherding relationship was that the sheep should not only be known, they should know. They should know a shepherd by name. It says in John 10, the sheep will know the shepherd's voice. And there again, it's not simply saying that if a tape came on and the shepherd's voice were on it, you would recognize the sound quality. John is far more metaphorical than that in his understanding of shepherding. What Jesus was saying is that every single individual deserves to have someone who they know. By that, it means they know the way they live their life. They know their values. They know their character. They know their priorities in life. And they can trust what they know about them. Every single person deserves to have somebody that they follow. Jesus looked down at Jerusalem, he cried, because he looked at a city that didn't have shepherds and people who didn't know their shepherd's voice and who were not known. It broke his heart. Now I would suggest to you that when he looks at Willow Creek, his heart still cries. Because depending on variously how you count the numbers around here, there are somewhere probably between 20 and 30,000 people who consider this to be their home church. That doesn't mean they come here every week, but if you were to run into them at the Dominic's and were to strike up a conversation with them, and when you got around to spiritual matters and you said to them, now, do you attend church? They would say, yes, I do. What is your home church? Willow Creek Community Church. Now, the best guess that we have, and our data is still not tremendously accurate, though it's far more accurate than it was a year or so ago, is that out of those 20 to 25,000 people who consider this to be their home church, our estimation is that at best 5,000 of them have a shepherd. 5,000 of them are known by name, in the sense that Jesus meant those words in John 10. That breaks Jesus' heart. He never intended for people who matter so much to him to be so disconnected. Well, if you want to know what the small group ministry of Willow Creek is all about, it's simply about removing the tears from the eyes of Jesus. That's what it's about. It's about a vision that says, Jesus, we know what breaks your heart and it breaks our heart. We know what matters to you and it matters to us. And we're not simply going to pay lip service to it. We're going to get about it with every fiber of our being. So the vision of the small group ministry is simply to connect people. That's all it's about. To connect people to God and to one another. Or to put in what we have said so far, it is to make sure that every single individual, 20 to 25,000 people, have somebody who knows them, who knows their hopes and dreams and fears, who knows their failures, who hears the confession of their sin, who mediates the grace of God to them through a touch of forgiveness and compassion, somebody who knows them well enough to help dream dreams with them and about them, somebody who knows their gifts well enough to put their gifts into play and sharpen their gifts and develop their gifts and motivate and encourage them. I think Jesus wants everybody to have somebody like that. And this is about connecting people to such a relationship. And it's about more than that. It's about giving all of those 20 to 25,000 people, let's say 20,000 currently unconnected people, somebody they can know. The word Jesus called it was making sure they all have a shepherd. The word shepherd is simply the word that we bring into our language and call it pastor. I think it's Jesus' desire that every single person at Willow Creek have a pastor. And let me tell you, if you would ask that person in Dominic's, casual attender or regular unconnected attender, who's your pastor? They'd say Bill Hybels. But I guarantee you, what they mean when they say Bill Hybels is their pastor is not what Jesus meant in John chapter 10. Jesus didn't mean that someone would stand up on a stage in front of, you know, thousands and thousands of people and talk. Certainly that was a part of it, but it was really an infinitesimally small and, I would suggest to you, inconsequential part of it. And I say that as one of the people who is perceived by people in the church to be their pastor, because I talk to them. That's not what Jesus meant. He meant that they would have a pastor who knew the sheep by name. See, that's what this is about. So what's the vision of the small group ministry? It is simply to give everybody a shepherd. And I want to suggest to you, there's nothing more central to the heart of God than that. There's nothing more central to the heart of God than that. And those of you who get your heart inflamed by vision, you might want to know that those of us who dream dreams about this don't stop at the 20,000 unconnected. We look around this place like I think Jesus did. We look at the northwest suburbs and really the whole city of Chicago, and we see hundreds of thousands and millions of people who do not have a shepherd. They do not have anybody who loves them, who lays down their life for them, who cares for them, isn't involved in their life. There's not anybody that they trust in their following. Their cynicism and their skepticism is corroding their heart because there's nobody that they're connected to in a shepherding relationship. So our dream, it's real simple. Give people shepherds. Connect people to pastors. Now that's a radical dream. But it is really our vision. We state it more concretely for you at the top of the first page. To connect people. Now the next word is very important. The next word says relationally. The small group ministry is not a program, friends. Let me just net it out for you. It's not a program. Now there are programmatic dimensions to it. Because we believe that these programmatic dimensions, like the entire department that Greg heads up, the systems component of this, is important. It's important because all the systems and all of what appear to be programs exist simply to make you, if you choose to be a small group leader, successful. That's all they're about. All we're trying to do is facilitate your ability to be pastors to your people. That's what we exist to do here. But you'll notice that the connection, the mechanism of connection, is relationships. Nobody was ever designed to be connected institutionally. Nobody was ever designed to be connected programmatically. When Jesus sat on the hillside overlooking Jerusalem, he wasn't praying for a new program, friends. He wasn't hoping that the God of the universe would bring into place a new institution. He was looking for people. For people. Earlier in the Gospel of Matthew, he said, "Man, just lift your eyes to the harvest. It's white. So beseech the Lord of the harvest to raise up laborers." People. We want the connection to be relational, because we are first and foremost made in the image of God to be relational. We want everybody in this place to have a relationship that is real and authentic and truth-based and love-motivated. It's a relational connection. That's why you're going to hear in a few minutes about filling the open chair. And you're going to find out that our entire strategy for connecting all of these unconnected people is all built around the power of personal invitation. There is no big program coming. I mean, we're not going to roll out some massive technology to connect all of these people. It's all about leveraging you and the people in your groups to give a simple personal invitation to an unconnected person and say, "Would you like to come under the care of our group? Would you like to be known by the shepherd in our group? Would you like to be loved by our group?" It's all relational. So we want to connect people, to give them a shepherd, to give them a pastor, if you will. It's really a very biblical notion. The method is through relationships. And we want it to happen in groups. Now, when we start talking about small groups around here, it's a technical term to us. It means 4 to 10 people. For the purpose of, and here's what we'll net out if this all comes to pass, people will grow in Christ's likeness. They'll become more like Jesus. Maybe my favorite verse in the whole New Testament is 2 Corinthians 3:18, that really gives the basic bottom line purpose of your existence. It says, "But we all with unveiled face," that means without pretense, without pretending, without hypocrisy, "we all with the simplicity and reality of who we are, behold as in a mirror the glory of the Lord. And as we do, we are transformed into the same image." I call it the magic mirror. It's the only mirror in the world that when you look into it, you see a face other than your own. You'll see the face of Jesus. But that mirror, as you gaze into it, will transform you into the image you see in the mirror. It's becoming like Christ. But we all, with unveiled face, without pretense and pretending hypocrisy, are staring into the mirror and we're seeing the face of Jesus, and the goal is to become like Him. That's why the purpose of this whole thing is to grow to become like Jesus. Second purpose, to love one another. You remember that when Jesus was asked to net out all of the entire Old Testament, which is some project, you know, "Give me the Cliff's Notes," He said, "I'll give it to you. Love God and love one another." I mean, really, the whole of the Bible can be distilled down to love. Love God and love each other. So we consider ourselves successful as a small group ministry if and only if people love one another. And third, that these individuals would be freed up to contribute to the work of the church. So do you see what we're talking about here? The overall strategy is to connect people, to give people shepherds and pastors. Our whole methodology for that is relationships. The purpose of it is that people will become more like Jesus in quiet, simple ways. They'll change from the inside out. They'll become what God intended for them to be when He sent His Son to redeem them from sin and slavery to sin. They'll love one another. They'll learn what it means to live in loving relationships with each other. And they will be freed up to make a strategic contribution to the eternal mission of God, that is the local church. So we are successful if people get connected. And if in that connection, they are slowly but surely becoming like Christ and loving each other and being freed up to make a contribution. Why? Because we believe that'll glorify God. And that's the end all and be all of life. There it is in a nutshell. If you want to carry a picture out of here of the vision, then I would encourage you to carry the picture of Jesus on the hill over Jerusalem crying because people didn't have shepherds. That's what motivates us. That's what motivates us. Jesus wants that too. Now that's the vision, that's the mission, if you will. We have 5 values that undergird this that I will not detail for you, I'll just read the bold print. First, Jesus Christ as head of the church intends His followers to become like Him. What we're saying here is that the first purpose of this entire ministry after glorifying God and wiping the tears from the eyes of Christ is to see people change, life change. Now, you know this around Willow Creek, but I just want to tell you that there are countless numbers of places, local churches around the world, who have not yet owned the reality that they exist to see life change. That the purpose of the church is to make disciples, better disciples, more disciples. It's not simply to congregate and coagulate, you know, a group of bodies in one room. I mean, the church, Willow Creek, is not successful because we have a lot of people who come to our services. None of us believes that. Our services are simply front door entry points, first steps. If that's the only step people take, and for hundreds and thousands of people, it might be the only step they take, we're horribly unsuccessful because it's about life change. So when we talk about groups and we talk about you and leadership in groups, we're talking about the fact that what God wants is for people to change, to begin to bear the fruit of the Spirit in their life. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, self-control. We want their relationships to change. We want their relationships with their parents to change. We want their relationships with their friends to change. We want their relationships with their spouse and their children to change. It's about change. It's about becoming something. Really, the whole fire of this thing is the idea of transformation. So I would just say to you right off the top, if you're not interested in changing yourself, then this isn't something you want to be part of, because you will feel, I believe, a loving pressure. Not a shame-motivated, guilt-based kind of thing, but a loving, gentle pressure to be always in the process of changing. Just moving towards the truth. Just moving towards the light. Just letting God change you. And the reason I say you'll feel that pressure is because it is true about life change that it is caught before it's taught. In other words, if we release to you the most precious treasure that this church has, which is the people of this church, which is really what we plan and prepare to do. As leaders, we plan to entrust you the most precious thing that this church has, people. And we know that what your involvement with them is all about is seeing their lives change. Well, that cannot possibly happen unless yours is changing. And that's from the inside out of this whole ministry. As the person who spearheads this whole part of our church, I am committed to being a changing person. I am different today than I was 7 days ago. And I can tell you in concrete and practical ways how God has spoken truth to me this week. And in itsy-bitsy, little, tiny ways, I'm a different person. Because there's no way I could lead you if I wasn't changing. And you can't lead your people. Because the goal is life changing. The next value, our method. This is tremendously important, friends, and this is radical. It's radical worldwide, and for some of you, it's even radical in this church. So listen carefully. The second value of this entire thing is that a small group provides the optimal environment for the life change Jesus Christ intends for every believer. Did you get that? Now, these things follow upon one another. They're like a series of dominoes, and if you tip the first domino, and the first domino is that God intends for everybody's life to change, if you let that domino tip, then they're going to fall in succession. And the second domino tip that tips is a philosophical value that we hold here, and that is that life change occurs optimally in the context of a small group. Now, listen carefully to me. Life change is not optimized at the weekend service. Life change is not optimized at the new community. Life change is not optimized when 40 or 50 or 60 people get together in a classroom and listen to somebody teach, say, at the New Community Institute. Those aren't bad things. They're good things. They might even be considered necessary things, but they're not optimal things. What we are saying, what the elders of the church are saying when they bought into this entire value system, which they did over a year ago, is this. Listen, if you're not in a small group, the reality is you are not positioned optimally for life change. I mean, that's a heavy statement. To net it out, that means that we've got 20,000 people who count Willow Creek to be their home church who aren't positioned optimally for life change. You say, so what? So what? It breaks the heart of God. Because if the whole church is about making better disciples is about life change, and if you've got 20,000 people who aren't in a connected community, a small group where life change is optimized, then they're not becoming what God intended for them to become. Now, why is a small group the best place for life change? I think it's self-evident. If you asked me to put in a kind of a popular, non-theological, non-jargonesque way to talk about life change, I'd tell you life change simply occurs when this happens. When you get a chance to tell your story, the story of your life, your journey, your struggle, your pilgrimage. When you get a chance to tell your story, And that story is compared to the story of Jesus. And then, in the context of love and truth and grace, that's the relationships of a small group, gently over time, your story becomes the story of Jesus. Now, what I want to tell you is that you cannot become like Christ unless you have a safe place where you're telling your story. It's essential for anybody to become like Christ that they have a place where they can tell their story, the story of how they struggle to be a young mom who's successful in raising her kids in the fear and admonition of Christ, all the struggles of that. We have countless young moms in this church who live with the daily struggles of what it means to be a good mom. They don't have anybody to tell their story to. But it's not just enough to have a chance to tell your story. Maybe it's the story of how you struggle as a businessman to be ethical and on the cutting edge and make Christ real where you're at. Who do you tell that story to? Who do you tell your successes to? Who celebrates your successes to you when you draw an ethical edge and you don't step over the line and you make a stand for Christ? You've got to have somebody to tell the celebration to. All kinds of people don't have any place to tell that to. You can't say that at the new community. Come on. Our church meeting. You got to have a place where you tell your story, where you tell the story of your struggle with your sexuality, for example. Whatever your struggle is, who do you tell that to? That happens in a small group, 4 to 10 people, where you meet for a long enough period of time that everybody can tell their story. And then you look at the story of Jesus. We'll tell you that we don't care what curriculum you use in your small group. We have probably 100 different approved curriculum. We don't care. As long as the curriculum paints a proper picture of the story of Jesus and gives you a chance to talk about it. That's all we're interested in, is that you sit around in a group and tell your story in a context of love and care, and then somehow you look at the story of Jesus in the Scriptures, and then you say, I see who He is and how He related and loved and was, and I see what I want to become, and I see where I am, and I know I need to move from here to here, and the formula for moving from here to here has been, is now, and always will be truth. I tell the truth about who I am. I tell the truth about who He is. And grace. I don't shame myself and feel guilty because as I tell my story in the context of a small group, 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 other people don't look at me with condemnation in their eyes. They look at me with love and understanding and gentleness and they say, it's okay. It's okay. That's why Christ died. That's why He lives. That's why we're here. We'll just take you by the hand and we'll go the next step. Okay, what's the next step for you, young mom? What's the next step for you, ethical marketplace person? What's the next step for you in your sexual journey? Do you see? That's what small groups are about. That's what they're about. So the vision, connect people to God and to one another to give everybody a true pastor. How do you do that? Well, you realize life changes the goal and life changes optimized in a small group. Now, if you let those first two dominoes fall, the next page will trip the third domino. The third value is this. This will blow your mind. If it's true that life changes the goal and if it's true that life changes optimized in a small group because it's there that I can tell my story, I can see the story of Jesus applied to my story, and through grace and truth I can change gently and slowly over time, then look at this one. Therefore, the most strategic person in the life change process of the church is the small group leader. The most strategic person at Willow Creek is the small group leader. Now, do you think people believe that here? Remember that guy that we ran into at Dominic's and we say to him, do you attend Willow Creek? And he says, do you attend church? Sure, I do. What church do you go to? I go to Willow Creek. And let's say he's a casual weekend attender, shows up 2 times a month. Maybe once in a while drops into the new community, comes to special service. If you were to say to that person, now let me ask you, okay, do you mind? Who's the most strategic person at Willow Creek? What would their answer be? Sure. It'd be Bill Hybels. Because the way that we are formatted to believe is that the person who puts on the show for the biggest number of people, that's the most strategic person. Whoever stands on the stage in the lights with the sound system attached to them, who captures through oracular skill the imagination of thousands of people, that must be the most strategic person. No. 1,000 times no. Those of us who have that function in this church, Bill, myself, Lee, a handful of others, we would tell you that we exist to make you successful. We really believe you're the most strategic people in the life of this church. Bill and I talk about it this way. We say that we're like a burner on your stove. And onto that burner is placed this container, this church. And in this container are all the ingredients for a magnificent God-made stew called people. And the purpose of the burner is simply to heat up the pot so the ingredients in the stew begin to move and bump against each other and begin to release their flavor. But nobody, after the process is all done, walks in and says, "My, what a wonderful burner." Nobody comes over to your house when you've invited them to dinner, you know, eats the meal and says, "Well, the meal is fine, but could I go just be with your burner for a while?" No, you'd say the burner plays its part, the burner's important, maybe even essential to what you did. That's what the Bible says. Teachers play their part. But their part is not that they should be the focal point. The focal point is the fragrant aroma of the stew. So what we do on weekends at New Community and big events is simply to get the thing heated up. Why? So you can bump against each other. So you, the shepherds, the leaders, and the apprentice leaders can bump against each other so you can get people connected into small groups where their lives will change. Do you see? Everything we do to serve you. One of the fellows here, you know, we're back in the back talking, and when he's walking, I said, "Hey, I just want to thank you for being here on a Saturday morning. You know, I don't take that lightly that you would come." And I said to him, "Hey, believe me, I wouldn't miss this meeting. This is the meeting that matters to me." Now, I have these teaching gifts which drive me to have to do things like the New Community. But believe me, this is where I want to be. Because I really believe that if we're going to get the tears off the face of Jesus, you're going to do it, not me. So if I can spend 45 minutes with you, if I can encourage you and warm your hearts, if I can give you a vision and a dream of what God intends for you to be, I'd rather be at this meeting than any other meeting in the life of the church. This is the meeting that matters. This is the chance for me to get to be with the most strategic people in the life of the church. And you'll see, we will prove it to you if we haven't already. Those aren't just words. We really mean that. We exist to serve you so that you can be successful in accomplishing the vision. Well, because we know that you're the most strategic people in the church, we will regularly give you three things. We will regularly remind you of the vision. We will regularly bring you together in a small group yourself. You'll hear about this throughout the morning. You'll hear about coaches. For every 3 to 5 leaders in the church, small group leaders, we have a coach. And the coach exists to serve you. Because we're convinced that you cannot give out what you don't get. So you will be in a serving group made up of 3 to 5 other leaders, and you will meet twice a month. You will huddle together is the word that we use. You will tell your story about what's happening in your group. You will share the victories and celebrations about what's going on. You'll pray and you'll problem solve. We're convinced that if you aren't regularly reminded of the vision, and if you aren't connected in a huddle to a compassionate, caring, empowering coach, you won't be successful. And this is all about making you successful. And the third thing we'll do is we will give you skills. Because really, now this will blow your mind and this might overwhelm you. You are going to be the pastors of a handful of people. We're unashamed about that. That's really what it is. You're going to be the pastors. Well, many of you are just average, ordinary people, right? And you're saying, "Wait a minute, I mean, you're going to give me 6 to 10 people?" We're convinced you can be successful at that. If we keep your span of care small enough, just 6 to 10, we're not going to ask you to care for 16 or 28 or 42, just 6 to 10. And then we're going to tell you that we are going to leverage your ordinary abilities with skill sets. We're going to put you in out of your depth, if you will. Shortly into your ministry of being a shepherd to 6 to 10 people, you're going to say, "I don't know what to do here." Fine, that's why you have a coach. And for every 6 to 10 coaches, we have a full-time paid staff person, a division leader, who exists to make them successful. In other words, the network of support system is overlaid time and time again. It's all designed to deliver to you the skills and the products you need by way of care and nurture to give to your people what they need. We will not give you a ministry as mighty and noble as shepherding people and then cut you out to do it on your own. You will be cared for and tended to. You will have the skills you need to get your job done. So what's our vision? Connect people. Why? Life changes the purpose of the church. Where does that occur best? Small group. Therefore, who are the most strategic people in the church? You. Fourth value. The way we want this to be done is that we want groups to expand and multiply. Now, you're going to hear all about what we call the open chair. And the idea is that every time you get your group together, you're going to have an open chair. And that open chair symbolizes the fact that there are still unconnected people, sheep without a shepherd, do you see? In this church, in this community. And before your time is up as a group, you as a leader and your people are going to say, now God, we have something wonderful happening here. We're loving each other and we're caring about each other, and in many of your groups, serving groups especially, we are accomplishing an incredibly noble task together. We're doing something that matters, God, and we have an open chair, which means there's somebody in this church who needs to be part of such a mission and a vision and a dream. There's somebody in this church who needs the love we have for one another. There's somebody in this church who, if they don't fill that open chair, we're not going to be all we were intended to be, because their gifts are not serving us either. That's the idea of the open chair. And you will be responsible as a group to gently grow your group over time, to add new people to it. Small groups have been around in churches for years, but it was really closed group models that many churches bought into. It was kind of an us for and no more thing. The idea is, we get what we wanted. You know, man, I finally got a shepherd and somebody loves me and this is a wonderful, loving little deal. Now let's close this thing. Let's can it. You know, get all you can all you get, poison the rest idea. Because I got what I want. But do you remember the story in Kings in the Old Testament where the leopards go outside, they're kicked out of the city? The city's under siege and everybody in the city's starving. The leopards get kicked out and they find a whole cache of food. Remember that? And after the leopards, you know, satisfy their hunger and their thirst, then they say, what we're doing isn't right. We got to go back into the city and tell them what we found. The natural tendency of groups is, once you get what you wanted, is to say, this is enough. But spirit-led people like you are will say, this isn't right. There are still these thousands of unconnected people. We got to go invite them into the group. Do you see? So we're going to teach you how to fill the open chair. And when you fill the open chair, your group is going to go from 6 to 7 to 8 to 9 to 10. And then you're going to say to us, wait a minute. You promised me that I'd only have to give care to 10 people. And when I start giving care to more than 10 people, I get burned out. And if I'm the most strategic person in the church, you can't let me get burned out. And we'll say, you're absolutely right. And we have a solution. And the solution is that your group, once it gets to be about that size, 8, 10 or so, will give birth. Because from the beginning of your group, there was you, the leader, and there was your apprentice. And all along, you knew that one day, one of you would go one way and one would go the other. And you'd take a handful of people with you. And you'd birth, you'd spawn, you'd multiply, positive, upbeat, exciting words, not divide, not split. Birth. So once the group reaches 10, we'll teach you today what birthing is all about, and your coach will walk it through with you when you get ready to birth, and your division leader will celebrate it. Because then there'll be two small groups, both led by capable, qualified, envisioned, encouraged, equipped leaders, both of whom have apprentices working alongside of them. Both groups are now filling the open chair, right? So that they grow and multiply and birth and spawn. And before long, we've gone from one group to two groups to four to eight to 16 to 32 to 64. Friends, you run out the multiplication on that. Just run it out a few more iterations. You know what you get? You get, in a matter of 5 to 6 years, all the unconnected people in this church connected. So people say, why in the world do you want to do this growing and birthing and multiplying? Ah, ha, ha, it's just another trick. Willow Creek is all about numbers. It's just another way to get numbers. I promise you that's not what it's about. It's about connecting the unconnected. It's about giving that person in Dominic's the chance to have a shepherd, the chance to be known and to know. It's about life change. You've heard me say it if you've been around very long. This is not about Willow Creek getting bigger. This is about Willow Creek getting smaller. The key to the largest church in North America, friends, is not to get any bigger. We all know that. The key is, can we get smaller? If we can get smaller, truly smaller, so that everybody's connected in a small group, then listen to this. It doesn't matter how big we are. It really doesn't. I get asked all the time. I was in Canada this week, in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, speaking to 18 different churches there. And they always ask, how big's Willow Creek going to get? And I always answer, I don't know. I don't care. What matters to me is how small we get. Because if we get small enough, we get small enough, then we can be limitlessly big, because God can entrust to us His most precious and prized resource, people. Why? Because He knows we'll shepherd them. But if we don't shepherd the people He's entrusted to us, I think it's a matter of time till He stops entrusting them to us. Why in the world would He give a precious person who matters infinitely to Him to a church who can't shepherd them? He won't do that. This is about getting people in the right place, do you see? And the last value, the fifth, The first is life change is the goal. Life change is optimized in small groups. Therefore, you, the small group leader, are the most strategic person in the life of the church. The whole strategy is grow and multiply and birth through apprenticing because they're unconnected people. And the last and final value is we're going to do this ministry in an atmosphere of prayer and celebration. Prayer simply means utter and total dependence on God. Just in the 30 minutes I've talked to you, you can probably see why prayer might be important to this. About the time we hand you five people and we say to them, now get this straight. We'll say this to your people. Your shepherd is that woman. Your pastor is that man. People are going to say, okay, I got it. What you're telling me is if I have spiritual, emotional, physical needs, I go to that person. That's correct. You got it straight. If that doesn't drive you to your knees in prayer, then you don't understand what's going on. Right? That's why we say this will be done in an atmosphere of prayer. Utter dependence on God, because what we're doing and what we're called to do is so unbelievably significant, you could never do it out of your own strength. None of us could. So we will pray. We will pray. My favorite verse on prayer is Luke 18:1. Jesus said to the disciples after giving them a huge vision about what they were to be, he said, now you got one of two choices. You can pray or you can faint. We won't shame you into prayer. We'll just say, if you've taken on the mantle of shepherding, you have one of two choices, faint or pray. Drop dead from weary exhaustion and overwhelming burdens, or pray. Take your pick. And the last thing is, it'll also be done in a spirit of celebration. We're going to have fun doing it. We're going to celebrate. And we do. Celebration is woven all throughout this ministry. The chance to celebrate what God is doing in our midst. We call it storytelling. We capture your stories. We let you tell your stories. We celebrate God for the story of your group and your life and the individuals whose lives are changed. I have in the top left-hand drawer, the first file in my file folder is stories. And I just capture story after story after story after story after story. And I, like many of the people in this church, just read them and say, praise be to the one true great God for the stories of life change. That's celebration. And then we will gather together on a regular basis to celebrate. We have celebration coming up in June. We'll do it at least twice a year where we gather to do nothing but celebrate what God has done in our midst. Why? Because it's His work. And He deserves the glory, and it ought to be fun to cooperate with Him. See? That's what we're about. You're not here at another meeting about another program. I hope you sense that. Because if you think this is a program, you're missing the point, and you'll be sorely disappointed, and you probably shouldn't become part of it. But if you feel the quiet urgings and promptings of the Spirit of God in your life that says, maybe I ought to, maybe I just ought to, go ahead and take on the mantle of being somebody's shepherd. Just 6 to 10. Maybe I ought to assume responsibility for praying them into a position of life change. Maybe I ought to go ahead and take on the mantle of being a strategic life change agent. Then you're in the right place. And I want to tell you, if you go that way, you are locking into an adventure that's as great as any adventure that a human being can be part of. You're locking into an adventure that's straight, dead center at the heart of the God of the universe. And we invite you into that adventure. We invite you in. Why don't I pray? Because I won't see you again. I go now to the coach's clinic and tell them they better do their job right because your lives depend on it. Father, thank you for this vision. It's not one that any of us concocted. It's one that you had years and years and years ago. The vision of the priesthood of the believer. The vision of people with gifts of shepherding and encouragement and exhortation and leadership and teaching, leveraging those gifts in the lives of a handful of people. The vision of people really becoming like Jesus in loving, truth-telling, accountable relationships. The vision of the work of the church getting done in teams that we were never meant to be burned out and frustrated and isolated and used up and thrown away because we worked so hard to do your work. We were meant to do it in cooperation with a handful of brothers and sisters. Nobody was ever meant to serve around here alone. We were meant to do it in teams. Thank you for that, God. I ask you, as I ask you all the time, just bring your vision to pass for this church. Bring it to pass, God. Through the power of the resurrected Christ and His Spirit, we pray. Amen.